Feel like we took a long break from November into April or May when we finished our second episode, or our first episode of the WordPress Learning Special Pops series. And now we're back with our second episode of this, and super excited to have David Richardson with us, and we'll introduce him in just a second. But my good friend Mike, man, how's it going? How are you? How are things in Utah?
Dude, they are fantastic. I cannot complain too much. And
yeah,
you guys,
if we did, nobody would listen, right?
That's No, but there's been some cool things happening around here. And for those of you who are listening and remember, just over a year ago, Jason put out a My First Resume kit, and I thought it was one of the coolest things ever. I tried pitching it and pitching it and pitching it, and boy, I was just nothing, no connection. And so this past summer, I've been going out with our CT coordinator, and I've been using Jason's actual post for LinkedIn. And I've just been showing the principles, like, this is what we could do at your school. And I've got the first four principals I talked to said, we need that in our schools. And I've got a fifth one coming up who says, yeah, show it to me. And all I got to say, Jason, is thank you so much. And I know that you say your stuff is free, but maybe we should start a GoFundMe for all Jason's ideas, because it was gold.
Well, man, I appreciate that. The and I will honestly say I need to give a little bit of credit the majority of the credit to Jan Jardine, because when we were evaluating posts for the National WordPress Learning Conference in Utah, I told her, I felt really bad because I would not post session proposals. I said, I felt really bad because all the people who are talking about elementary work-based learning, I was like, "Aunt, no one wants to hear that, because in Georgia, work-based learning is only high school." And she's like, "Oh no, it's like work-based learning in elementary schools is big all over." And so we met a little bit later and talked about that. And because of her influence on me, it was just kind of like, "Oh yeah, that like we still won't call it work-based learning. We call it more career awareness in elementary school, and then we call it career exploration in middle school. And then work-based learning in high school is how Georgia kind of defines those things." But that's cool. Thanks for sharing. That's pretty unique. Wow. And don't forget, Mike, you always say what you want about free, whatever, but, and you don't need to give me the credit for that. That's why I put on LinkedIn, but originality exists in forgetting where you heard it first. So it's all you,
well,
man.
Well,
it's
thank you, Jan and Jason. You guys both get a GoFundMe account.
Well, we appreciate that. David, man, welcome back. This is you are the first return guest on the 2152 project. How's that make you feel?
That feels very good. And like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and Mike. I think you do a phenomenal job. And like I said, your work and dedication to this surely needs to be noticed. So I do appreciate the opportunity to come back and discuss things with you.
Well, thank you very much. So the last time we had you on, we were talking specifically about your role in the trades and with construction. But this, it was after that filming when we were waiting for everything to upload to close the Zoom, you started sharing about your heart on another topic. And that's something that really kind of piqued my interest. And if I'm honest, between myself and Mike, was the genesis of this series, was something that you were talking about. So if you will, just enlighten our audience quick before we get into our discussion. Why are you so passionate about special education, specifically as it goes to the trades and work-based learning, but special education in general? Why are you so passionate about that?
Well, I'm very passionate about education. And if a person doesn't have education, they're not going to be a successful person. So that's why I think everybody needs to go to school. Everybody needs to invest themselves in school. But when it comes to people that, students, if you will, that don't fit the standardized test paradigm, okay, if they don't sit in a classroom, if they don't take notes, they don't sit still, and at the end of the year, they don't do good on the test, then where's the education for those particular students? And that's where I want to focus. Where's their success? And just like you said, those students are called special education, exceptional children in some states. And there's nothing wrong with them. They're actually not special or exceptional, other than the fact that they just don't fit in to what the education culture considers a successful student, which is somebody that can score well on tests and is ready to go to college. So
Okay.
what are we, so those particular students, I think, are the ones that need education the most. And then next, what are we doing to help them?
Okay. So you're okay. So let me pair or let me clarify a question clarifying. Your issue is with the fact that there is a construct that we have deemed as normal education,
Right.
and any student that tests outside of that construct is deemed special education, regardless of value to anything else. They are deemed as outside the construct of normal, therefore they are special,
Right.
and that's kind of where you have your issue
Right.
with that. Okay,
So how do we make
awesome.
sure that they get an education that's going to allow them to be a successful person in their
Okay.
community and in our country?
So something that I want to be very clear with up front is your view of this may not mesh well with a lot of people, and you're understanding that. We
Oh,
understand
yeah.
that. Like I said, this is just something that Mike, I think Mike's going to share a story in just a second, and before we get into the actual questions and content, but Mike and I have had these conversations, and it's this conversation is not an attack on special educator teachers, on case managers. It is not an attack on anything, actually. It is just us simply questioning the efficacy of how it's done apart from career tech ed and apart from work-based learning, and what that construct means. So I know this could be potentially a very, very divisive topic, and but that's something that we don't want to shy away from. This is just a conversation. We are not saying anything should or shouldn't happen. This is a conversation about your experience, moving forward with that conversation. I want to jump to Mike. Mike, if you walk us through, I know you've got to change names and content for FERPA compliance, but walk us through the conversation that you and I have had about that got you thinking about how work-based learning could facilitate special education and IEP and transition plans, but it's just not being adopted in mass.
Oh boy. Yeah, I mean, here's the situation, and I think it's something that many districts could relate to, saying, yeah, we could see that happening. You have a situation where a student is going into an internship. An internship in Utah is considered the capstone of their CT pathway. And so what that means is this student has already taken one, two, or more classes in their pathway, identifying what they want to do or what they're super interested in for a career.
Okay.
This student goes into the internship, things aren't going well, and eventually it just led to, okay, we gotta part ways. And that's
Which
something
happens
that
in this job, that
it
happens.
happens all the time. And the thing I've realized though is that people don't get let go from their jobs because of their resume or their skill set. They get let go because of other factors. The interview gets you hired, your personality gets you fired, type of thing. And as I initially was trying to figure out how can I save this thing from failing, I actually was just looking for resources. I pulled the YouScience aptitude test, and it was talking about a clear pathway, saying this is what the student wants to do. I then compared it to the IEP that was assigned to the student, and it was 180 degrees different than her CT classes and her aptitudes and her pathway and everything in between. There was not any crosswalking information. So my next question was to the case manager, saying, why would we write this IEP this way, and why do we make these goals, knowing this information about her, the fact that she's taking this capstone course? And they said, well, we didn't know about that. What is this? And as I approached some of the signatures on the IP saying, why did you sign off on this? They said, well, we refer to the experts. And the experts in this
and
case.
Real quick, you are not saying this in a malicious way. You're just saying, hey, no. Look, how did we get here? Because when you reveal what this young lady's career goal was, like, it's going to be kind of clear why you had some reservations about this. So not attacking, saying, hey, look, how did we get to this point?
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, the way my brain works is, you know, I'm a fixer in terms of I like to fix things, I like the landscape, I like to build. And so you got to understand the whole process all the way through. And as I was talking to some of the signatures on that paper, you know, they said, let's refer to the experts. And the experts are those in the special education department. That's what they were saying. Look, if they said this is the IP, then we're going to sign off on it. And I was like, then why is the pathway, the capstone, the aptitudes, everything is screaming human service industry, like healthcare industry, but yet you're saying that her goal is to go work at a fast food restaurant for the rest of her life. And
that was the actual goal in the IEP, was to work
well,
to get
fast
a
food.
Job at a fast food restaurant
and take some college courses while she explores what she wants. And I just, I was like, what? Now, my thought is, if I was to really press this issue, I think where we're going to end up is this. We are understaffed. We got a lot of students with IEPs, and we can't be the one-stop shop for all of these students because of funding and staffing. And if that was the final answer, I would say, I completely agree. So what can I do? How can we utilize work-based learning, bring it to the table where when your specialties end, we can pick up and we can see the student all the way through? Because the goal is not to get them to reduce their education plan. The goal is to really make them workforce ready in the end. And if you don't know how to do that, refer to us. We'll come in and we'll help you help these students become workforce ready.
So you were offering your services.
Yeah.
And so again, a clarifying remark is there is no shade being thrown. This is like counselors. I think counselors get shade thrown at them all the time. And it's non-deserving because counselors do a ton. And same thing with special education practitioners. This is in no way a slight toward anyone in that field. This is a question of saying, look, you are the content expert when it comes to special education. But I think kind of our first question going to be toward David is this. Do it now?
If I could just make one comment and then I'll go silent, I promise. But
No.
I want to make it clear because I'm not complaining. I want to make it clear that for that student to get to the point where she was eligible for a capstone opportunity, there was a lot of people, a lot of case managers, a lot of special ed teachers that were helping her working through all of those life issues that she was facing. They're the ones that made it possible for her to get to that point. And so I don't want to undercut all of their efforts and all they've done because they've done a lot. All I'm saying is just that last little connection piece. If that's where you guys run out of gas, please call me and I can help.
Yeah, 100%.
So go ahead.
And so I guess that what that looks like moving forward is the first kind of question is, why do we think that there are barriers that exist between special education and work-based learning? When work-based learning people, career tech people, they are the industry experts. That's what we do. And every IEP, at least as far as I'm aware of, every student with IEP has to have a transition plan, which is a plan that helps that student transition from high school to career. It makes sense for us to collaborate. And that's the thing is we're not asking someone to do more. We're asking someone to do less, to let us help with that. So I guess my question would be to David or to Mike or to whoever, what do we why can't work-based learning help in facilitating that transition plan? We talked a little bit about that with our last guest in this series, but why can't work-based learning help with that? What are the obstacles that you see in us being able to help and facilitate that, not just at one school or two schools or three schools, but across the country? What are the barriers? Is it just tradition?
Yeah, I think it is. And I'll go ahead and say for North Carolina, we're about 3 light years behind We're Georgia and Utah, so we don't have any capstone, or we really don't even link our CTE completers to any workforce stuff. So basically, in North Carolina, you can take some CTE classes, and then that's really it. There's nothing that, so we don't even have a workforce link there at all in North Carolina. But
Okay.
I think the answer to your question, fundamentally, first is communication, and
Yeah.
then the second is that these workforce providers, development providers, need to see a benefit from the services that they're providing. So
Yeah.
number one is communication. We need to communicate better with them. And the next thing is we got to provide them kind of a return on investment. So at some point in time, we need to have successful students going into these workforce situations and contributing to that provider. I mean, and if we can do that, then it's going to drive itself. And then back to the special education part of it, I think for kids that are considered to be EC, which is exceptional children, or kids that are considered to be special, they have a tough time identifying something at school that is positive for them. So school
Because they're
to them,
always seen as different, is what you're
right,
that's
they're
your thing.
negative. It's
Yeah,
negative. Where's
that's your
your
thing.
homework? Where's your pencil? Your test scores are low. Everybody else is going to go and do such and such while you stay here and study on something. Your book reports don't look good. So these students are looking for something positive in school, and workforce development activities can provide that positive link.
Yeah.
Something that, oh, look, we learned about this particular career today, and I'm interested in doing that. And look, this particular career needs math. I don't like math, but I do like this career, and this career needs math. Oh, and look, well, this is the type of math I'm interested in because it goes along with this career. So, really, if we do it right, workforce items issue, well, I would say training, if you will, but I think they can really provide an anchor to a lot of our special populations kids in school. So you're gonna reduce dropouts, you're gonna increase attendance, you're gonna decrease disruptions. If you have an anchor, if you have something that that kid can come to school with day in and day out, and have a and have some relevancy. So it's relevancy.
And that's really interesting, David, because I don't know if you've listened to the previous episode with Melanie Allen, but she said something that either is very very closely paired to what you just said. She said that in her study, in her research, within her district and her programs, she noticed that some type of a career assessment, like what Mike mentioned, maybe a U Science, that's Mike and my preference. There are other models out there that we think are slightly less effective, to be generous. But something like that, when a student can say, like you just mentioned, I'm not great at math, but I want to do this career, and this career involves a little bit of math, can be the thing that keeps that student coming back to school attendance-wise,
Right.
Melanie said, or can be what makes that student work a little bit harder because now they actually have a reason other than you need this to graduate. But
Right.
when you can tie something tangible like, oh, you want to be a welder, well, welders have to know angles for cutting and grinding and this and that. So you've got to learn geometry to be a decent welder. They're going to say, okay. And they now have buy-in. So that's something, again, not a special education expert here, but Melanie is, and she parroted what you just said, that could be something that is very tangible in getting buy-in from the students. So I really like that. So let me ask you another question. What do you think about we're all over professionally developed, right? I mean, that's something that we all face is this professional development and this professional development and this seminar and this and this. So I guess the options to solve this are one of two things. We either have to put one more thing on are brilliant, lovely, and just super effective special educators, in that they need to be trained in career development, or it's we need to begin to talk about fostering a relationship between our special education experts and work-based learning and career tech people who can serve as industry experts and who can partner alongside of those things and help get those IEP plans written with efficacy, written with, or at least regarding career development. And Mike, I think you said something best kind of in our pre-planning for this was you said, you mentioned earlier that one of the responses that you could potentially get would be, hey, we're short-staffed. Well, you know who's already on the payroll?
Work-based learning.
Work-based learning is already on the payroll. Like that,
Yeah.
like the school already pays for them. So why? And I think this comes, and this is my passion, is I love working across content areas, across instructional domains. And if that's something that I do well and that's my sweet spot, then yeah, absolutely want to help. And I've already done a training or two with our special ed department at my school in how YouScience can help them instructionally with transition plans. It can actually become an assessment, a formal assessment in that transition plan, as well as giving them data so they know how to fill out the vocational goals for those students. And it's working. Like, I mean, I'm excited to come back to school in August and actually put some of those theories into practice. So I guess it's not really a question. I guess it's just saying, what's better, to put one more thing on our special educators and ask them to become experts, not only in what they do, but experts in career development and vocational training? Or do we partner two entities, separate entities together that both possess a separate content expertise? And when doing that, we're going to kind of see our students kind of served a little bit better. Any thoughts or comments on
Yeah,
that before we kind of
let me say something there in regards to what you're talking about. And we have the special populations educators, and in North Carolina, it's called exceptional children. And those particular teachers, we give them extra supports for math or reading and things like this. But I think the answer to your question is, well, and I don't know how it'll work, but I really think that we need to transition your special populations educators into standard teachers, but they're teachers of a different education model.
Okay.
Okay.
Now,
And
yeah, so now I see what you're saying. And that's what could be very controversial. And I know that's your passion. And I think it's very interesting to follow that. But yeah, go ahead.
okay. So at that point in time, what happens is now you have a model, an education model that continuously flows. It flows from the elementary school where we're doing career awareness. It naturally flows to the middle school where you're doing career exploration. And it naturally flows to the high school. And in the high school, if you do it right and you start setting up credentialing programs and things like that, you're going to be able to have these, what we now consider special population students, leaving the school when they're 16, 16 and a half, maybe 17, and going into apprenticeships. Okay. And that could be so, and you get rid of IEPs, you get rid of all this stuff. And so you get rid of all that paperwork, you get rid of all that. I mean, at the end, when a student graduates, let me ask you this question. And they have a, you have a folder on this student, everything they've done from elementary school to when they graduate. Okay. And you have one. What happens to that folder? Is that folder saved or is it shredded and thrown in the trash?
Well, I think it has to be saved for at least 7 years. I
It's
think,
7 years, but after that, it's gone. So what did
and
you
I could
really
be
get?
wrong, but I know it has to be saved for a
Yeah,
certain
it,
amount of
three
time.
to three to 7 years, depending on, but eventually that stuff is disposed of. So for 12 years, you saved a bunch of data, and then after a period of time, you're going to throw it in the trash. Well, then what did you really do in those 12 years?
I can see that argument. And I think that the biggest concern with that argument, David, is just we live in such a litigious society
I understand.
that people want to have And that kind of comes back to something that Mike and I talked about, and I guess we can go into that next question is I think some of that frustration is that litigious environment where or standard educators, you know, the your what you would call that normal construct, teachers within that and outside of special education, sometimes feel like when you question the process, that IEP is used as like this righteous shield, like you can't question this process. And I understand that. And that may not be my personal view, but I understand why somebody would or could think that, especially when you get into the conversation now of can we include workforce ready? And look, there are some phenomenal programs in Georgia. I think it's even a nationwide program, but CTI is a great program, putting students who are classified as special ed into the workplace. But I guess what you're saying is, if I want to summarize, I don't want to put words in your mouth, David, is why do we have two separate programs when basically CTI is for a small group of people? And this is why isn't it just an immersive program? And I guess that's kind of what's intriguing to me about this. But I'll also say I think it's unique in that we have what makes this problematic is that as far as you go into this topic, whether you agree with me or Mike or David or anybody else, is what this really boils down to is someone, look, we may have already stepped in a big pile of it right now, because if someone's probably listening, they're mad at us, and I hope that they understand our purpose is to have this conversation about how Whitworth Learning can facilitate this. But what it really boils down to is there's still a very prevailing stigma about career tech education. When I graduated in class, and I'm gonna date myself, in 99, yes, our class song was Prince, Party Like It's 1999. But when I graduated, there was still college prep and vocational education. And the stigma was you were only in vocational education if you weren't smart enough to go to college. And I
Correct.
think that's a line in a rhetoric that was perpetuated by a lot of the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, and they're pushing college right about the same time they started subsidizing it through student loans. It's pretty unique when you follow that paradigm. But I digress. That's a different topic. But my question is, or my statement is, there's still a paradigm and a stigma that exists in that. Don't tell me, David. Don't tell me that we should include more vocational programming for special education students, because what you're really saying is they're not smart enough to do X. And you're saying no, that comes back to the stigma of vocational programming is less than whatever variable, X, Y, or Z.
Right.
And my sentiment is vocational programming is not less than. Vocational programming is just a different model for.
Right.
There are students who are classified as special education who are going to excel in academics.
Oh, yeah.
There are students, some students are going to do well in math. Well, this is not a student specific. This is a question and a comment about the model in general. And not even saying that it's broken. I think you may say that it's broken, but I think my standpoint is, what can we do to make it more efficient for all parties involved?
Yeah,
The special
yeah.
educators, the career tech people, but more importantly, the students. What can we do to make that more to increase the efficacy of what it is we're doing? Because we're all busy, we're all have things to do. So that's a
Right.
really unique perspective on that. Mike, do you see that at all? I mean, do you still, I mean, I know it's not like it was like in the late 80s and 90s, but do you still think there's a stigma toward career tech ed?
Well, of course. There's a stigma, but I think that the cost of secondary or post-secondary education is actually creating a space for the trades to come in and say, "We got you." I mean,
100%. Yeah.
I got more students coming to me right now than I've ever had, saying, "I want to go make real money right now," and more than ever. And so, to me, it's the walls are coming down. There's no doubt about that. Cost has gone it's just gotten too high. And yeah, I mean, I would say that I see progress.
Awesome. So
Yeah,
let's go back just one.
I agree with you, Jason.
Good.
for too many years, especially if we go back to me, anything other than going to college was considered second place or third place. And so parents had that drilled into their heads. The federal government, colleges drilled it into your counselors drilled it into the students, into the teachers. I think the biggest thing we're going to see right now outside of education, and just like Mike talked about it, and our parents are starting to see the writing on the wall. And when parents start driving the bus, we're going to see wholesale change. And I think we're fixing to see parents waking up, realizing that this mission statement that they've been told for the last 50 years of, if you want to be successful, you have to go to college. And I think once the parents fully get behind, there's another option other than a 4-year college degree, then, and I think I think your higher ed folks are already starting to see that. They're really starting to sway it. They see the changes and the writing on the wall for them as well. And let me say this, I'm not against college. Don't get me wrong, but I'm for student success, whatever makes that student the most successful.
And, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I had a conversation yesterday. I was actually talking with a connection on LinkedIn, Derek Cameron, and we were in, and he's from academia. He's from academia, like he taught at university, and I am working on a terminal degree at the moment. And here we are, two people. He, you know, I was getting his advice on this podcast, and he has run a podcast in multiple, but one of the ones we were talking about was his Inside the Trades podcast. And I was like, how funny is it that you got two lifelong academics who are promoting the trades? And parents are starting to wake up, and so what you really have happened is in a lot of states, Georgia's one of them, in the mid to late 90s, you started having, it got started becoming really popular to Georgia. We passed the lottery and used that lottery to fund a scholarship. And what that scholarship did was anybody who had a GPA of 3.0 could go to college. And that's phenomenal. It's a great thing. It's a great, great thing. But what it did by forcing everyone to college, not forcing, but incentivizing everybody to go to college, because how, let's be honest, how hard is it to get a 3.0 in high school? Not hard at all. Especially when you consider, and when I graduated, getting those, having your electives come into play. But what it did was it took those students who were on the fringe of maybe going to college, maybe not, and it gave them an opportunity to go to college. That's a phenomenal outcome. But what we didn't see happening on the back end of this was it was going to create a massive void in the skilled trades, because those students who normally wouldn't have gone to college would have gone to work in trade school or tech school and become a tradesman, done something in a service industry. And the other side of that is what it also did was it diluted the value of a 4-year degree, because now everyone has a 4-year degree. So in order to differentiate yourself from the applicant pool, what you have to do is go back and get an advanced degree, which is more money, more student loans. So I am never, no one has ever or can ever say that I am not a fan of academic university or academia. That's not the case. I'm a lifelong academic. I am a fan of, or not, I am not an enemy of college. I am an enemy of the one size fits all approach to post-secondary training. That's what I'm an enemy of. And that's why I think, maybe summarize your statement, David, is you're a fan of, the reason this construct exists is because we have set up one goal as the only effective outcome for a student. And if you don't have the mental faculties or the academic abilities to succeed, to achieve that one goal, which is college, then you are set in a separate department or separate category, separate, you know, area called special education. I think that is what a lot of educators have a problem with, is the only, it exists because there is only one possible outcome. But when you open up the outcomes to, if you want to be a doctor, then college is for you. If you want to be an accountant, then college is for you. If you want to be an architect or a drafter, college is for you. But let's stop forcing everyone into that one size fits all approach to post-secondary training. And let's begin to partner our career tech and special ed departments together and produce some really cool, really valuable outcomes for students whose transition plans actually relate to what they want to do, such as Mike's story. So really interesting Any really interesting content there. So, Mike, any thoughts? Any follow-up questions? Anything? I want to make sure you're. I
No,
see you reflecting. You're
I
deep in thought.
yeah, I'm just
I'm envious of your ability to reflect and not speak. I need to quit speaking so much.
I'm just curious. I mean, I like where you guys are going, and I like what David's saying, and just want to keep hearing a little bit more. David, fix it for us. Fix the system today with no duct tape. No duct tape
and no,
Super glue.
five alarm bells going off
Yeah.
with people who hate us because they think we're anti-college or anti-student or anti-special ed. That, again, I can't say enough. That's not our purpose here today. We just want to have that conversation. So I guess my next question would be, if Mike, you said earlier, if the goal is to prepare every student for college and career readiness, if that's the goal, what value do accommodations and modifications have on an IEP if they're not preparing the student for career? So that's my question, but with a caveat of, I am not a fan of the moniker college and career readiness. I don't like it. I know a lot of states have adopted it and it's a part of our federal language. I don't like it. And here's why I don't like it. I've never met anyone who retired from college. Even people who go to college go for a career. You want to be an architect? Then college is the path for your career. So I don't like the college and career ready. I like the career ready. And if your career requires college, then go. But if your career requires trade school, then go. If your career requires going to work right out of high school, then do that. Can you do it with credentials that you earn in high school through CTE programs? That's what I think the model should evolve toward, is just preparing students for college. So back to the question,
Right.
are accommodations and modifications, what value do they have if they're not preparing a student to be employed or go into the workforce? Thoughts?
Well, you said Mike, but I think you meant David on this one,
Well,
because, but
either.
I'm in the same boat. I hate the whole college and career readiness comments, or I hate that tag. I say workforce
Sounds
ready.
good,
Yeah,
but when you drill down, it's just career ready.
I'm like, are you workforce ready? What's it going to take to get your
Yeah.
workforce ready? That's
That's
it's pretty
right.
simple. But go ahead, David.
I would say that modifications and things like that are actually negatives. I think they're band-aids. And I hate to say this, and I know it upsets some people, but a lot of the things that we are doing are like you said originally, they're trying to shield what's really going on. So we don't want people to know what we're really doing in school. So we come up with these, I call it data and gimmicks. A lot of these things are gimmicks, and they're just to get students through the years. We want positive data. That's why we raise the graduation rates. We quit doing discipline and suspensions, and that way that data comes up. And so we just want positive data. And this is more band-aids and gimmicks to give us positive data to kind of shield the true actions of what's going on in our schools today.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, yeah, I'm sure someone's not going to like that.
Yeah, but
But
truth
I
hurts.
appreciate, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective on that. And I think, there's a lot of places in education where what we really do is polish the apple, but we don't want anybody to bite into it. And we have a really pretty shiny apple that we put on our desk and say, look at this. Isn't it pretty? But nobody wants to take a bite out of it. And I think that's the thing, is it's kind of like smoke and mirrors. And look, I there is value in what's happening in our schools. There's no question about that. No one's attacking anything. We are trying to have a conversation. How can we make it better? And you're saying make it better by actually having a goal and not deflecting, like not pointing somewhere else, hey, look over here, and I'm doing this with this hand. Kind of just making sure people understand what's the true value, career ready. And that if a student, whether they're required special or categorized special ed or not, they need to have a customized plan to put them in a path that's going to make them career ready. If they
Here's the
fit in
way
an
I
IEP to do that, then do it. If they don't, then that's fine. But that's the goal. That's what I think all three of us are saying is, regardless of how you want to classify a student,
Right.
the end goal should be workforce ready,
Right.
career ready. And if that requires college, great. If it doesn't, great. But
Yeah.
let's stop forcing kids in one direction.
Right. And when I say what I say, I'm not trying to upset anybody or hurt. But look, if you took a handful of seeds and threw them on the ground, they're all going to bloom at different times. Okay. They're all flowers. All of them are flowers. Some flowers are tall, some flowers are short, some bloom early, some bloom late. So let's say you have a kid that's in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, and right now, they're just acting up and cutting up in class. Okay. They're just not getting it. Okay. But maybe one day they might go back to a community college and take a couple classes when they're 22, 23, maybe even 30. So maybe they're blooming late. Okay. But I'll tell you one thing though. If you make education a drag, if you make education so negative that it repulses them, they'll never come back to education. And that's where we're running into a lot of times, especially with the youth that need education the most. We bring them in. You think about this. So you got kids that are coming from homes. You know, mom and dad's gone. There's violence. There's whatever. You know, they got up. They hadn't had a good meal in 2 or 3 days. They hadn't had a bath in 2 or 3 days. They hadn't had their clothes washed in a week. And you're wanting them to come into a classroom, sit down, shut up, take notes for a test at the end of the year. How's that relevant to their lives right now? And then you're going to put them in an EC or special populations program and call home and tell them, hey, your kid's coming to class and they're not paying attention to what we're doing in class because it's not relevant. We have to have relevancy. Okay. We have to have that is success. And if you're wanting to go and drive a dump truck or a concrete truck, if you're wanting to be an electrician, if you're wanting to be in construction, maybe you want to be a tool and die maker in manufacturing, whatever it is, you're going to have something that's relevant to that kid for them to want to come back every day. And we're seeing a new thing coming up. And that's what I call edutainment. We want the gamification. I call it it's edutainment. So we're going to entertain them so they come back the next day. No, they need to come back the next day because they want to learn something.
Because they have value. So I guess I can see that side of your argument is making these students feel welcomed in an area where they find value. That's what brings them back. And again, I think that's something that Melanie talked about last time. So, man, this has been great. Mike, any comments or closing comments or questions? Or again, understand this is not the typical, hey, we're all laughing, having a good time. We very, very, very much understand the weight of the topic and how some people could be offended. And I'm sure we've stepped in it a few times. And again, our intent is to be positive and to find a way that we can partner and work together. I probably said that too many times.
Yeah.
People are probably tired of hearing me say it,
But the
but
greatest,
that's our intent.
the greatest resource we have in our country is our youth. The greatest resource. We've got to develop that resource. We've got to culture and cultivate that resource. And we're just not doing it right now. And so we've got and we've got to change that. And it has to happen quick. We can't wait 20 years. It's going to have to happen quicker than that.
I agree. I agree. Mike, any comments in closing? You're always such a champion at summarizing and giving us some takeaways. So no pressure, but bring the brilliance, my man.
Well, no, and when it's all said and done, I think it's great. I think the one thing that's been established from this whole process is that there's room for improvement and there's need for improvement. I don't think anyone, whether they are on either side of the conversation, would disagree with that, right? I mean, it's something that we can definitely improve on. I think the fact that there are different ways that we can teach, we talked about streamlining it. We talked about, dropping the titles and teaching a little bit differently. I think that's definitely something that could be adopted. And whether it's adopted as a whole model as a district, it could definitely be adopted by a teacher or by a set of teachers, who have just said, look, let's try this out. I don't think anyone's gonna shy away from it. But at the end of the day, if you are a special ed teacher or district that's looking for more resources and you understand there's a gap, but you just don't know how deep the gap is, that's okay. reach out to your work-based learning professionals. We'll step in, we'll see how we can help, and we can definitely create greater outcomes working together than we can working in silos.
That's right.
And
100%. I
so
was going to use that same language, silos.
my takeaway is just, let's collaborate and let's see what our barriers are and let's see how we can fix it.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So, thank you again to our niche following. We are very grateful for the people who listen to us and who tune in, and we hope that we provide value. Our next episode is going to be the final episode, unless something else emerges. It should be the final episode in this series, and we're going to talk to, excuse me, Dr. Chelsea Morelli, who is a special education professor in Georgia, and she is someone I would consider at the top of the special education profession. I mean, she's young. She's recent, recently gotten her doctorate, but she is one of the most sharp people I know, and I have no doubt that she will disagree with some things that were said here today. And that's the cool thing about discourse, is maybe we can have a disagreement, and maybe we can take some content from this episode and listen to next episode and merge it together and develop our own plan for how CTE, work-based learning, can partner facilitate a robust special education program. So thank you to all our listeners. We appreciate that. I hope everybody has a great day. David, thank you again for coming on and sharing your opinion, having a tough
Appreciate you, Jason.
conversation. And hopefully we can see some change realized and some programs increase their efficacy. And bottom line is students have more opportunity to do what it is they've been called to do. So thank you, everybody. Mike, I appreciate it. Everybody else, have a great day. Talk to y'all soon.
Hey, thank you
Thank you.
guys. Boom, 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 boom